Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Go to the corner to Maitland. Maitland's there. He's got the opening try for Scotland.
And Scotland have won by 13 points to 7.
Through was Hugh Jones, through the gap, under the post. Try for Scotland.
Scotland's men's team have a first win on Welsh soil since 2002.
Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. The winning streak is over. Scotland were beaten by France at the weekend, and we are back to wallow in the misery of Scottish rugby once more with all of you. Thank you very much for joining us. As ever, it's David, Alan and Matt. Alan, how is young Freya dealing with her first ever Scotland loss?
Absolutely devastated, actually. Once the game was over, burst into tears, shat herself, had a complete meltdown. But good for her to understand sort of the pain that us three have gone through over the last sort of 30-odd years.
And she did have that sort of joyous, you know, first 10 days of her life where Scotland were undefeated. I mean, you can't beat that, really, for life experience.
Exactly. Had sort of a glimpse of the light and had it sort of cruelly taken away from her over the weekend.
Well, poor Freya. Well, as you say, she's got to get used to it like the rest of us. Matt, how are you doing, pal?
Yeah, not bad. At least Freya's got company in young Jura, you know, gone through that kind of roller coaster of emotions already in their short lives. But yeah.
Did we establish if Jura was a boy or a girl?
I think it's a boy.
Okay.
I would have to refer to the original email. I'm pretty sure Jura's a boy. I might have misgendered Jura on last week's pod. But that is just what happens in the, I suppose, the high-stakes world of Scottish rugby podcasting. So apologies to Jura and family. So thanks very much for joining us. We're obviously going to be talking about the Scotland-France game from the weekend. We're also going to have a little bit of a look at Glasgow Munster in the pouring rain last night. But before we get there, there's a little bit of news, mostly coming out of France again and Paris. Finn Russell has re-signed his contract at Racing 92. I believe it's 2 or 3 more years. Matt, he's obviously been thriving down there. Are you happy to see him sort of re-sign and stick in the top 14 for another few years?
Yeah, I think so. It's pretty unsurprising, I suppose, that he's decided to extend his time there. It seems like he's absolutely loving it. And obviously, Racing have been going great guns recently, getting to that Champions Cup final. So not a surprise at all. And, you know, I think for his game, I think it's at the moment one of the best places he could be. I think the fact that Racing is still challenging at the top of the top 14 and the Champions Cup, and I think it's developing his game overall. Pretty good news for him and for Scotland fans on the whole, I suppose.
Absolutely. And shall we chuck in some little wicked whispers that and a little bit of the rumour mill? Obviously, there was a little bit, a couple of weeks ago, Hamish Watson was potentially being linked with Racing 92. He did an interview, I think it was Gavin Harper and Rugby Pass, where he then denied that. But we put out a tweet, and this is obviously high stakes investigative journalism. We put out a tweet which, when they were speculating about when Racing were going to make an announcement and it had a Scotland flag in it, we put out a tweet saying Hamish Watson to Paris, ? And the eyes emoji. And that sort of passed, you know, they confirmed it was a Finn announcement. But then out of the blue, Rex Club, a company run by Hamish Watson and his brothers, liked that tweet speculating Hamish Watson. So I don't know about you guys, but I'm taking that as confirmation.
Yeah, I guess there's a real breadth of motivations behind liking a tweet, ranging from I'm confirming that this news is correct to you guys are complete morons. Why are you tweeting this shit? So, but I think we just take it for what we think it is, which is confirmation that next year Hamish Watson will be playing in the blue and white hoops at Racing Metro.
I thought it was quite funny, the Racing tweet, when they just sort of said signing news, and they just put a Scotland flag there. Now, to my knowledge, Finn Russell is the only Scotland player in that Racing squad. So I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but it seems like it maybe could be a bit of a tease of what is to come, like something that maybe got the rumour mill going a bit, or potentially I'm reading too much into it.
I think this is like all conspiracy theories. You take the information out there and you make it fit the narrative that you want. And I think we want to see that little bit of spice, maybe Hamish heading off to a big payday in the top 14. Although, I mean, should we stick with the theory as it is at the moment? But if it does come to pass, how do you think Edinburgh fans would sort of react to that?
I guess if there's one kind of area of both pro teams that you don't mind losing a kind of top quality player, is probably the Edinburgh back row. If anything, I think we've said that there's almost, you know, too many people available for the Edinburgh back row outside of right now in sort of normal times. So I think, you know, Hamish Watson leaving, whilst obviously it's pretty it's always going to be a bit of a devastating loss, I think we need to kind of create those opportunities for people like Luke Crosby. And I think, you know, for Hamish Watson, ultimately, he's been a pretty great servant for Edinburgh over the last, what, must be at least 10 years. I don't think anyone kind of begrudges him sort of going away and just getting what is potentially maybe his kind of final long-term contract, where he's going to make a pretty unbelievable wedge, I imagine.
Yeah, and I completely agree in terms of, you know, creating the opportunities for bringing through these young guys. And also, it would be interesting to see how Hamish Watson does in you know, arguably higher performance environment, or at least playing for a club where there's going to be a pretty high likelihood that he'll be featuring in the knockout stages of the Champions Cup. Because obviously we've seen in the last couple of years, Hogg, Gray, Russell depart in a similar way. And you'd probably argue that in all of those instances, their moves have improved their game. And also it kind of gets to that kind of difficult situation where Hamish Watson is away a lot with the national team. There might be a lot of games next year, like there have been so far, meaning that he doesn't actually, you know, get a run out for Edinburgh that often. And, you know, with the ability to bring through guys like Crosby, hopefully Bradbury can find a bit more game because he's definitely got a high potential. And then, you know, the young guys coming through like Connor Boyle and Rory Darge, I think it kind of makes sense overall.
Absolutely. Well, we keep a extremely close eye on that story, and particularly the likes of the Rex Club boys. You never know if you see them liking any tweets that suggest that Hamish is on his way to France, let us know, and we will hype up that transfer as much as we possibly can. But let's move on to the main bit of business. Scotland losing their 5-game winning streak to France at Murrayfield, 20-15. They were in it the whole way, but yet it still didn't feel like they were ever actually going to win it. Matt, I'll come to you first. Why don't you give me your sort of your top line thoughts on the match from Sunday lunchtime?
Yeah, I think you're right. Scotland were always in the contest, but I think it would be a bit of a stretch to say that they ever really looked like winning. I think that you know, the pack fronted up pretty well against what was a very strong French eight. And I think that the defence was reasonably good. I think that when Scotland did get their hands on the ball and kept it tight and went through the phases, they managed to put France under pressure, which led to quite a few penalties being conceded. But overall, there was just a sense that France were fairly comfortable containing that Scotland team. And I think the disappointing thing is that, you know, Scotland in the end actually did dominate possession, territory, visits and time in the opposition 22, but never really looked like crossing the line, actually, which is kind of the disappointing thing, I suppose, because, you know, we have talked about this evolution that the Scotland team's gone through, but it would be slightly disappointing if we'd sort of, you know, solidified the defence whilst kind of losing that ability to score tries when you do have the likes of Hogg and do have Van Merwe and even, you know, Kinghorn in that back line.
It's interesting kind of, you know, thinking back to sort of 2 or 3 years ago where there was just that almost like standard template for the Tom English article, which was Scotland are great in attack, but are very weak in defence. And then you sort of compare it to the game on Sunday where very much, there's been this kind of almost kind of complete flip where they attack just, and I appreciate that there's a few factors at play, which includes A, you know, losing your two starting tens and also the weather not being particularly great. But you really sort of, the attack for the majority of that match looked so blunt. And actually, it felt like there were, again, I appreciate the conditions, but there was just such a lack of ambition across the park that it was a little bit depressing at times. And then at the same time, to your point, the kind of main positive was outside of the set piece, that pack, especially that kind of second row back row and Fraser Brown at hooker, kind of in kind of open play, just against a pack which potentially sort of the best pack in the Northern Hemisphere, were really able to sort of step up and really kind of look like, you know, for what was, you know, a pretty massive and aggressive kind of French performance, they were really able to kind of step up and kind of see them kind of eye to eye.
I agree. And I think if you add the likes of Sutherland when fit and Fagerson and obviously Russell or even Hastings, and I think also a bit of a mitigating circumstances was the way that, and maybe it's to do with Scotland's lack of discipline, but the way that the game was reffed, I think, didn't favour Scotland. I think they, in the end, conceded 16 penalties to France's 9. And I think quite a few of those were marginal. I think there could have been a case for Kami Shah being yellow carded. I was surprised that that wasn't even a penalty. The France try, I think if that was re-examined by the TMO, there could have been a forward pass in there from Fiku. So those all sound like kind of mistake, sort of excuses rather. But I think it's just to show that Scotland, you know, weren't at their total best, but were in the contest the whole time. And, you know, if their luck had gone a bit of their way, then, you know, they would have been beating a France team that was, you know, that absolutely pummeled Ireland the other week and was 1 point away from winning the Six Nations ultimately. So I think there's been quite a lot of kind of gnashing of teeth from Scottish fans, judging by Twitter, but maybe we're being a bit too downcast.
Can't believe the people of Twitter would be unnuanced and take a negative view of Scottish rugby. But pick up on something you said there, Alan, about that sort of lack of teeth, I suppose, going forward. Do you think it is that does ultimately boil down to the personnel issue of Duncan Weir at 10? Or do you think Townsend's still trying to work out how exactly this Scotland team plays? You know, we've moved on from fastest brand of rugby in the world. Have we maybe overcorrected to uber defensive?
Yeah, I'm not too sure to be fair. I do think that, you know, those moments where Russell was on the pitch, especially against Georgia, you could see that sort of that kind of attacking pattern sort of developing. It still feels like we struggle with Sam Johnson and Chris Harris in those centre positions, and there doesn't appear to be much attacking threat, both, you know, coming from them when they sort of straighten the line, but also in terms of what they're able to do in terms of linking up with, whether it's kind of Duncan Weir coming around behind or whether it's kind of Stuart Hogg or the wingers kind of coming into sort of the attacking line. And it does feel like potentially those players are being picked first and foremost for their defensive abilities rather than what they can provide in attack. I don't know, interestingly, one of our mutual friends made the comment that they think Sam Johnson's still living off England 2019. I don't know what you guys think of that. I do think he's been a little bit of a shadow of that kind of 2019 Six Nations self over the last kind of couple of games.
Yeah, I've got that argument. I think that, you know, the Sam Johnson that got himself into that Scotland team is, he was in really good form, and he's such a great kind of idea, I suppose, because he can almost do it all. He is a good passer. He's very physical. He can make, and he's good in defense, and he can make breaks in attack. You know, I think he tried to put a few kicks in at the weekend, which didn't come off that well. But so I can kind of see why he's being picked. I think the disappointing thing is just, and whether it's down to his decision making or the strategy that is coming down from the coaches, but it seems like to me quite a lot of, and it was the same in the World Cup actually, you know, Scotland have a scrum that's won in a solid manner by the forwards. It's a great attacking platform, you know, even just outside the 22 in the opposition half. And the kind of strike move of the play seems to be just a pass to Sam Johnson, not Scott Johnson, luckily. And that's kind of it. And that to me, just, you know, when you've got a coach like Gregor Townsend, and you do have people like Hogg and Doohan van der Merwe, and, you know, Darce Graham wasn't playing, obviously, but people like him, it kind of feels like a slight waste. And I'm not saying Scotland should try and score from first phase every time, but it just feels as if Scotland aren't asking quite enough questions of the opposition defence at the moment.
Yeah. And I think it does feel like that 10, 12, 13 in the combo in defence is working, but in attack, there just doesn't seem to be that gelling of players. And I think, you know, to fair play, we go back to sort of the 2018 or 2017 when we had sort of Dunbar and Hugh Jones, there was, you know, the great thing about that was there appeared to be this kind of great kind of attacking threat, but too many times, whether it was Wales or whether it was England, there were just too many liabilities when it came to the defensive line. And we just don't seem to have found, whether it's the players or whether it's that combo of players, that can sort of satisfy both options. It's interesting. I guess thinking about the next game, you know, ultimately we've only got one more game as an international team. Do you think they'll be making any changes in that back line?
Can't really see it, to be honest. I mean, the guys you'd maybe think about bringing in, potentially return for James Lang, but I don't think he really showed that much at 12. Was Hugh Jones 24th man for the weekend?
It was for the Italy game.
Yeah, so you know, there's potentially an argument that you bring him back in, and obviously Jones and Johnson have played together at for Glasgow, but I it feels to me like that sort of Johnson and Harris is pretty nailed on at the moment.
I guess if you consider we're playing against Ireland as well, where you might be potentially having sort of it was Aki and Farrell at the weekend, who are both pretty strong runners. You'd probably be looking to have a relatively sort of strong defensive line. I don't know. I guess I was considering, and you know, sort of skipping ahead in thinking about the sort of Glasgow game last night and kind of the lack of depth they have. I think, you know, Hugh Jones played for Glasgow last time was 3 weeks ago, and has been in this Scotland squad for the last 3 weeks. You know, ultimately, if he doesn't get a game in the last game, it will mean that Hugh Jones has gone 6 weeks without playing a game of competitive rugby when he's fully fit, which, you know, ultimately just seems like a complete waste of what has been potentially Scotland's best attacking player in a club sense over the last sort of 2 or 3 months.
Exactly. I suppose I was going to talk about Jones there, but potential changes. It was interesting to see Duncan Taylor come sort of out of injury nothingness and straight back onto the Scotland bench, and he got some minutes towards the end. We know Townsend loves him. Do you think he will be sort of consigned to that sort of utility role, which he does fulfill extremely well, or do you think there's an opportunity to get him back in the mix for the starting 15?
It's a difficult one because Taylor has just played so many positions for Scotland, and he kind of seems to fulfill that role for Saracens as well. So it just feels like, you know, due to that, combined with the amount of injuries that he's suffered, there's just not been much continuity around him. So I almost think that, you know, if they chucked him in at 13 or 12 in the next match, I just don't know if that's kind of the best step long term. But then I think you're right. I think he offers a lot from the bench, can cover a lot of positions, and is a very experienced operator as well. So, you know, I think him combined with someone like Maitland, who offers that coverage across the back three, or a Kinghorn, I think that kind of makes sense rather than bringing him back in.
Yeah, there's been an awful lot of sort of fantasy midfield going on in Scottish rugby Twitter this week, particularly since the loss on Sunday lunchtime. Alan, of all the players available for Scotland in the midfield, not least the ones in the squad at the moment, who's your sort of fantasy Scotland midfield at the moment?
I mean, good thing I'm not a Slater. I still like Matt Scott, but he seems to have been, you know, sort of out on the sort of international wilderness for a long time. I guess, you know, I still think Hugh Jones brings something that none of the other centres can. And I remember once put out that potentially they should try Hugh Jones at 12 and Chris Harris at 13 if they're so concerned about Hugh Jones's defensive abilities, which got roundly sort of screamed down by sort of the Twitter masses. But it does feel, especially without Finn Russell at 10, that without someone like a Hugh Jones or a Mark Bennett, I would say, that we really do lack that sort of cutting edge through the midfield. At least with sort of Finn Russell at 10, he just has the ability to either kind of hit the line himself or do something that will just create space sort of naturally. But no, I mean, I think going into the Ireland game, it depends on obviously what Tooney wants. I guess if we're seeing this as sort of an actual proper competition, then I imagine he'll go for sort of Sam Johnson and Chris Harris. If he potentially sees it as a little bit more of an opportunity to sort of rotate players, then, you know, I'd be pretty happy to see Duncan Taylor and Hugh Jones given a run out at 12 and 13 and see how that went.
I think the other kind of interesting point is just, you know, if Johnson and Harris are nailed on for their defensive abilities, you know, I can kind of get on board with that. But there needs to be, and I think one of the criticisms is that Harris maybe isn't the greatest distributor, so a lot of the attack stops with him or doesn't even get to him. I think there was something online that said over the weekend of the Autumn Nations Cup, there was only in total 7 passes between 12 and 13. But fine if that's the case, and that's maybe the way that modern rugby is going. But when you have Doohan on the wing, you know, even Kinghorn, who showed after a shaky start in patches how good he can be in attack, and Stuart Hogg. And then on another day, you have Darcy Graham. I feel there needs to be a way, they need to be accommodated into the attack that isn't simply, you know, shipping the ball wide with hands. They need to be coming through the middle. They need to be running dummy lines, decoys, you know, like for that France try. But we haven't really seen that recently. And not to see that at the weekend was just, I don't know, kind of a bit disappointing, as I say, considering Townsend, you know, was this great attacking maverick as a player.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we spent about 20 minutes there talking mostly about the backs, but we started off talking an awful lot about, you know, Scotland managing to front up largely against that pretty dominant and enormous French pack. Who impressed you, Alan, out of that sort of Scottish eight?
I think it's definitely the best performance Matt Ferguson's had in a Scotland jersey. And I think the great thing there is that we've been pretty, I think we've all roundly sort of agreed that from 1 to 7, Scotland have a pretty set kind of view on who the first choice is. And I think with that performance on Sunday, I think Matt Ferguson has sort of slotted himself into that number 8 shirt, at least for like the first half of until the first half of the Six Nations. Because I think, you know, he's obviously played kind of the odd kind of good games for Glasgow, but in terms of an international level, he's never really sort of stepped up as much as we'd hoped. And I think, especially against a back row or a pack of France's size, he was really able to get a good go forward ball, but both in defence, was really sort of able to hit those French players. And even if he wasn't getting them backwards, he does have this ability to really sort of stop players in their tracks. So, no, I think that was really great to see.
Yeah, I agree on that. It's I think I could be wrong, but I think it's Ferguson's only Scotland game or only Scotland start against the Six Nations opponent that I can recall. I could be wrong. And, you know, I was just looking at him over the weekend, looking at stats and stuff. I mean, it is easy to forget that the guy's still only 22. And to be putting in that kind of a game where he's, you know, carrying for 70 metres, he had the most carries in the team, highest percentage of dominant tackles. It was great to see, because I think we've all been talking for a while about that sort of that troublesome number 8 jersey. And just, you know, if he's playing at his best, how balanced that back row looks overall. And I think that Richie Watson once again had really solid games, which kind of allowed Ferguson to that platform to perform as a number 8. I think, you know, the Thompson experiment, you know, he's maybe a useful bench option, but I think Ferguson at his best is a far better player than Thompson at the moment.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it was. I thought Ferguson looked really, really encouraging in that 8 jersey, and the thought that he's possibly got another, you know, 6 to 8 years in his sort of absolute prime is really exciting. And hopefully, he can grab that jersey a bit. I thought Scott Cummings had another impressive outing. He seems to continue to grow into that sort of really natural partner for Johnny Gray in the boiler house.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they complement each other quite well. And I think there was a stat that said that Cummings has sort of started the last sort of 12, 13 games for Scotland, probably since sort of the World Cup. And I think he just looks like if anything, I think he's probably ahead of Johnny Gray in the pecking order.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Well, yeah. That's an interesting shout. I suppose whose first name on the team sheet in that case is probably... It is pretty close between them. And there was an interesting piece with Mark Palmer talking about who interviewed Cummings on Sunday morning, talking about, you know, the work-ons that he's been getting from people like Dave Rennie. And something that I noticed, perhaps because it was mentioned in this article, his sort of lines of running. And obviously he dropped one, he left the ball behind on one, but it was really encouraging to see him sort of making these really dynamic bursts onto the ball at first receiver, which was a sort of a real change from a lot of our forward carrying, which is the sort of the real grunty short stuff, which is there's not an awful lot of dynamism, but he seems to be picking interesting lines, trying to run at spaces rather than bodies, which I think is a really interesting differentiator.
No, absolutely. And it's something I think a lot of Edinburgh and Glasgow players can learn from. And I also think he's really young. You know, we're chatting about Matt Ferguson being 22, but Scott Cummings is only 23, right? And I think it is his birthday in a couple of weeks. But, you know, for someone who is still relatively young to, especially in that sort of second row position, to kind of claim that as his own over the last years is pretty impressive. I think one of the players I was quite interested to see how they do was Ollie Kebble. And I think there's a guy who played rugby with me and Matt at university who was like this unbelievable athlete, but just like didn't seem to understand like how powerful or destructive he could be as a human. And I sometimes think that about Ollie Kebble, that he just sort of like lumbers around and like doesn't really move very quickly or like doesn't really make like that dominant tackles. You sort of look at him as sort of a specimen and you're like, you are an absolute freak. You should be able to like murder people all the time. I think I was just a little bit disappointed maybe with the kind of his overall performance, especially sort of maybe in open play. I don't know if that's being a bit harsh.
I actually was going to say that. I thought that after the first kind of 40 or so, it kind of looked as if the intensity of the match was a bit much for him. Or it's just, you know, that like proper test match intensity, which obviously he, you know, hasn't really played at. And that seemed to be kind of the main issue. And obviously the scrum looked a bit creaky. It was, I'm not 100% sure, you know, whether that was down to one particular side. But, you know, I was pretty confident that he would be able to hold up that scrum. So that was slightly disappointing. I mean, I still think like he's a guy whose work rate is really good. Like he seemed to make quite a lot of tackles, made quite a lot of carries actually for decent yardage out of that front row. But it, you know, in that kind of game where it is more of a, like a real battle up front and, you know, his value is like that kind of, first receiver as a forward is not quite as valuable as, you know, holding up the scrum. You know, I don't think sort of Sutherland's place is under threat, I suppose, at the moment.
No, agreed. I'm also coming, just thinking about that front row, I'm coming to the conclusion that I think Fraser Brown will 100% be going on the Lions. And I think it's going to be between him and Jamie George for that starting position at hooker. I think he's playing at such a high level over kind of both the Six Nations and the Autumn Nations Cup that he really he should be in that test team.
Even with his slightly wayward arrows?
Even with his slightly wayward arrows. He is the best like clear out rucker in the, I'm gonna say, the British Isles.
Yeah, he's been extremely impressive and he really seems to have kicked on. And I mean, Rambo was sort of left out of the squad entirely because obviously the sort of unique brand of aggression and dynamism that George Turner brings off the bench offers something quite interesting. But yeah, Fraser Brown's really accelerated away from Rambo in my mind, certainly in that discussion in the Scotland jersey. I will leave your Lions comments aside. I don't know if I can be that confident ever about Scottish people going on the Lions.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same actually on that one. I mean, I could see him going. I'm just not 100% sure that he will. It's interesting with all three of those guys because they have all come to the hooker position later on in their careers, I suppose. You know, all when they initially signed for their pro teams on those first contracts were back rows. And it does seem as if, you know, the first thing to fall apart in all of their games actually is throwing. So obviously Turner comes on and can make a huge impact in the loose like a flanker would, but then his arrows are wayward. And that feels like a kind of common criticism we've had of Brown and McAnally in the past.
I mean, that area in particular certainly felt like if we were in the fight, one of the key sort of things that we had to win it was, you know, when we kicked to the corners a couple of times, the lineouts went wrong and it really felt like quite old Scotland. I remember the days where we were getting a little bit of physical parity and we would kick down to the five and Ross Ford would miss a jumper or something like that. And it was, I think it's that sort of frustration that me personally and an awful lot of fans or other fans were feeling, that Scotland were creating the chances and sort of being let down by what seem on the surface to be quite, I suppose, basic skills in that, you know, chucking a jumper up and getting a ball to them is something that we should be able to do if we're going to compete at these at this level, which is really frustrating.
There was also an error on receiving kickoff, which is always makes my blood boil.
Right, always and forever will be a Scottish rugby issue that we will give away at least 3 points every game due to an error on restarts.
Yeah. But rest week now, because I think the Scotland-Fiji game was officially cancelled on, was it either Friday or Saturday?
Yeah, Fiji have absolutely had one. That is a 0 games completed in the Autumn Nations Cup. Interestingly, I think they're actually still beating Italy in terms of points conceded there. Which I think is quite shan on Italy.
I don't think that can be the case. Italy only lost to us. I've only played one game and they only lost to us by like 10 points.
Maybe I saw it
Georgia.
Pre the weekend. Maybe it's Georgia. Sorry, Georgia, not Italy.
Yeah, I was going to say, must have a better record than Georgia, although to be fair, Georgia pushed Wales relatively close at the weekend. It's looking like it's going to be Scotland Ireland at Murrayfield, I think.
No, I think it's at the Aviva, Alan. But yeah, it is a rest week for Scotland. It'll be interesting to see how that is used. I'm not sure what the protocols are about releasing pro players back because there's two Pro 14 fixtures this weekend coming up. So. Glasgow down in Cardiff on Sunday night and Edinburgh playing Ulster on Monday night, and you could think that both of those squads could desperately do with a clutch of sort of fringe Scotland players to give them a bit of a boost.
I mean, Glasgow desperately need some reinforcement from the Scotland camp.
Yeah, Alan, you were our committed correspondent watching Glasgow Munster last night. Could they do with some spare bodies?
I mean, yeah. But to be fair, I mean, the volume, it's not only just international duty that's killing them. They, in terms of the amount of games they've had over the last sort of 2 or 3 months, the volume of injuries that they've got to that sort of base of players who are maybe not going to start when you've got all your players back, but you would hope would be sort of available during the sort of international break, whether it's sort of Lee Jones, Kieran McDonald, Staffan McDowell, Kyle Steyn, Richie Gray, Adam Nicol, like a lot of these players that, again, you're really hoping are around when the sort of big guns are away, have just kind of picked up injuries at a really bad time. And, you know, whilst, to be fair, the Glasgow team kind of had a bit more, showed a bit more spirit than Edinburgh did against Leinster last week. It was clear, especially sort of in the forwards, as the game progressed, there was just a sort of slight gulf in quality. You know, ultimately, that the Glasgow subs bench, it's just they just don't have that kind of depth and experience to bring on the pitch.
Do you think that, you know, we'll look back on this period in a year or a couple of years, and it's a time when some Glasgow youngsters have sort of had their time to bed into the team and shine? Like, was there anyone in that vein who stood out?
Well, they're not that young, mate. That's the thing. It's like, no, it's not a particularly young team. So I'm trying to get the team up from last night. But, you know, in the back line, you've got Glenn Bryce, Seymour, Grigg, Pete Horn, Sean Kennedy all playing, who are all sort of pretty old heads. I think, you know,
I suppose you've got Robbie Ferguson and Robbie Nairn, for instance.
Yeah, I was going to come. I do still think, I know Robbie Ferguson has sort of carved himself out as this sort of sevens player, but I still think that he has scope to be a very good professional 15s player. I think he's such a great, a sort of natural sort of runner of the ball. And I think in the last two games where he's sort of been thrown in, he sort of showed up really well. I think, you know, last with the weather, you know, Nairn didn't get many opportunities. Obviously, he had a sort of pretty great assist for the Glenn Bryce try. And I think, you know, we've sort of talked about it, you know, a little bit off the pod, but I think probably the most disappointing thing for me, when you sort of look at the pack again, you've got the people like Rob Harley and Ryan Wilson, and it just doesn't feel like they're really stamping their authority on these matches when you'd really hope, as these kind of ex-internationals, kind of older heads, that they would really be able to kind of take these games by sort of the scruff of the neck. And actually, it really felt kind of yesterday anyway that it was people like Lewis Bean and sort of Tom Gordon who looked more like the sort of 20, 30, 40 cap players rather than Wilson and Harley.
Wilson started a lot of fights, to be fair to him.
Yeah, I don't know, like, I get that he's sort of got this niche as this kind of, I don't know, I was going to use the word ragamuffin, but sort of like, I don't know, what's a ragamuffin? Forgot.
I think that's fair.
Yeah? And he's like, you know, getting a bit of handbags, kind of getting in their face. But I don't know, ultimately, when he's sort of captain and you're sort of down, you're sort of 2 points down with sort of 50 minutes to go and they've got a man in the bin, it's like, just keep the heads calm. You know, we've got the momentum, we've got the advantage. And then, you know, sadly, last night, Wilson kind of dived on the Munster scrum half and ended up getting carded, penalty switched around, and they ended up scoring off the back of that line-out. So it's just a bit disappointing to see such a sort of shift in momentum from an incident that, you know, ultimately was sort of quite needless.
I know, obviously, there's no relegation in the Pro 14 or anything like that, but you look at Glasgow's start, played six, only won one, and got Cardiff coming up. You know, you'd think for just sort of like squad morale, and it feels like that could be quite an important match for them. You know, Cardiff, a team that, you know, they're in the sort of, certainly in that middle of the pack grouping of Pro 14. You know, Glasgow are traditionally in the sort of upper echelons of it. You know, going down there, it feels like if they can get to 7-2 rather than, you know, 7-1, you know, it feels like a really important game for Glasgow.
Yeah, I think the one lucky thing for Glasgow is actually their group outside of Leinster and Ulster is relatively weak. So you've got Glasgow, Ospreys, Dragons and Zebre. And I think I still think that ultimately when Glasgow get their kind of reserve play, their Scotland players back, even with a pretty weak period over the Autumn Nations Cup, they'll still have enough to come third in that group. It's still not great, right? They're probably going to end up having to play like Munster at Toven Park away for doing sort of the quarterfinals, but they do have that sort of a little bit of luck. I think that the sort of strength in Conference A is very top heavy versus like Conference B that Edinburgh in, where I think there's kind of probably not as, I think Leinster and Ulster are the two best teams across both pools. And so Edinburgh kind of have the unlucky thing where you've got people like Munster, Scarlets, Connacht and Cardiff, and then Benetton, who are kind of on average kind of better teams, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one. I don't often look at the Pro 14 tables, but you are right. Glasgow Dragons and Zebra sort of in that clutch of teams only with one win. But wow, Zebra have conceded 244 points with a points difference of -146. That is going some.
And we didn't actually get time to talk about the, well, we didn't talk about the Edinburgh game on last week's podcast, because we've actually recorded the podcast just before the match. But Edinburgh, after me sort of chucking down a lot of, putting Freya's trust fund down on Edinburgh being within 21 and total points being under 51, I got absolutely shafted by Edinburgh.
it has sort of, because of the, obviously we're in an international period and things like that, I think, because it was a slightly, if it was a Monday night game, it all felt a bit strange. Perhaps there hasn't been an awful lot of discussion of that game, but that I watched the extended highlights, and I know you watched the game. One of the worst performances for Edinburgh under Cockers, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that Leinster team is amazing, just like how much class they still have given the volume of players that are away. I think, well, I was sort of reading that, I actually think Leinster have got more players away on international duty than Edinburgh or Glasgow have, yet still can sort of put out a team that has Devon Toner and Scott Fardy in the row and had Levy and Rhys Ruddock in the back row. At the same time, you know, Edinburgh did still have a sort of blend of characters that some people with experience, whether it's sort of Bradbury, and then some of these more kind of youthful players that you're sort of hoping to step up, whether it's like Ali Miller or even sort of Nathan Chamberlain at 10. And I think, whilst I don't think anyone expected Edinburgh to win that match, the manner in which they lost is quite concerning. And I imagine Cockerill was pretty sour about it post-match. I actually almost think that Cockerill, when he came out after the match, was quite sort of neutral in his tone. He wasn't actually too harsh on the Edinburgh team. And I don't know whether that's a sign of he's so angry that he's sort of kept under wraps, or actually, you know, because it's such a young team, and he knows they've been so beaten down that he's like, I'm not going to sort of say anything more negative in the press.
I think he kind of, the turn he struck was one of kind of expected to lose that game quite comfortably. And I think, you know, he got off his chest afterwards in the interviews, how much the squad has been sort of ravaged by international call-ups and also hasn't really been able to strengthen much. I mean, from what you were saying, Alan, this new guy Ferreira doesn't maybe look up to that much. And I kind of got the sense, for instance, not to pick on players, but I kind of got the sense that Cockerill also mentioned the larger budgets that the Irish teams are operating under. So it just kind of struck a tone of him just being actually quite realistic, and there not being, you know, some things that he wasn't in control of. But yeah, I mean, just looking at those tables now, you know, that's three wins in total in 12 games for the pro teams. And you kind of look at those wins and none of them have really been against, you know, that high quality opposition. It's really not been a, you know, happy sort of period for the pro sides.
Yeah, looking ahead, we've got obviously the 1872 Christmas doubleheaders. Before that, Glasgow have got two games, Cardiff and then the Dragons. So they've got a really good opportunity, you would say, to hopefully turn that around. Then you go into European Cup, and then Glasgow have got Exeter and Lyon before back-to-back games against Edinburgh. Edinburgh have got just one more game before we have the European break, and that's Ulster on Monday, and then they go La Rochelle, Sale, and then back-to-back against Glasgow. So it's I would say it's a good opportunity for Glasgow to get a couple of sort of morale-boosting wins before they welcome the Premiership and European champions to Scotstoun, which will be a very interesting test for that site indeed. Alan, I don't think you've got a quiz, but you've been doing some analysis of the feedback of Amazon's foray into international rugby.
Yeah, I was on the app sort of earlier today, and I saw that all the games seem to have sort of like five-star or ratings that you can sort of rate out of five-star, and genuinely like the ratings given out by like the general public are like absolutely savage, ranging from like 1.5 for I think what was the England-Georgia game up to about 2.5 for what was the Scotland-France game. Now, the majority of the comments are either A, the coverage, the service in terms of like the actual kind of quality of the stream is really crap, or there is a lot of people who are sour about the English focused nature of the coverage. But yeah, I was looking at, I pulled out a couple of quite funny ones that I thought. For the top one was, thanks for nothing, Amazon. We'll give up and wait for Sky or BBC, .. and possibly cancel Prime. Does Gabby Logan know about this?
Thanks for nothing. It's so good.
Can someone tell Gabby? I don't know if she knows about how terrible.
Did you see the bit I found the weirdest was when obviously they're advertising other shows on Amazon Prime, and they were advertising the Premiership football, which, you know, makes sense. Gabby Logan can talk about that. But then she had to advertise that like Boys season 2 program and describe it. Time to promote it. I was like, do you have to do this right now? It seemed a bit bizarre.
Does Gabby know about this? Poor Gabby. She's out there doing her best. She doesn't know what Jeff's got planned.
I know, exactly. And the other one I thought was quite funny was this for Scotland, Italy, was even as teams in Florence were running out for the second half, we were still subjugated to the inane, myopic fanfest mutterings of Hartley and Flat, open brackets, sick, close brackets, and the ill-informed Miss Logan. If I'd paid for this, I'd been hacked off. Get the rugby back on the council telly.
Who's writing these comments? What's wrong with these people?
So, mate, there's loads of them.
Oh, that's my evening sources.
But yeah, no, it was it made me chuckle. Having Bezos is just like every day getting like an email through with like all the reviews and ratings. Just reading through like Big Daryl from Lanark. It's just like, fuck you, Bezos.
Love that. What a nice way to end the pod. Thank you very much, lads, and thank you very much, listeners, for joining us. You can always keep in touch with us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod, on Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod. Send us an email, thistlerugby@gmail.com, and subscribe to our newsletter. The latest edition is out at the moment. That's on Substack, Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. And you just pop your email in there and we will arrive in your inbox every single week, giving you our unique take on the game. But thanks very much. And we will be back to preview Scotland versus Ireland, we expect, in the semi-finals of the Autumn Nations Cup. But until then, enjoy and we'll speak to you soon.
Cheers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.